This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Greetings. This is Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm about to have a conversation. Master Plo, have you heard of this conversation?
Yes, KOTOR YAR, Obi-Wan. You're listening to Star Wars Conversations here, indeed.
Catchy. Conversations, you're the one. You make Star Wars lots of fun.
Yeah, you do.
Conversations, may the Force be strong with you. Sing it, Bubby.
Zoopy-doopy-doo.
Yeah, Bub.
Pat McCaffrey, you're so grand. Never afraid to lend a helping hand.
That's true.
Conversations, may the Force be strong with.
Absolutely be strong with.
I see what you did.
Oh.
Conversations, may the Force be strong with you.
Hello, and welcome to Conversations. I'm Charles.
And I'm still Pat, and this is episode 118. The Force is what gives a Jedi his power, but how does he harness that power? Where does he learn it from? The answer, Force Vision Quest.
Ooh, spooky.
Yes. Kind of. I mean, it is the season.
Tis the season, sure.
Star Wars spookiness. We should do a spooky Star Wars episode.
That would be fun, actually.
But not tonight.
No!
I mean, kind of, but tonight we have the Vision Quest.
Yeah, and, you know, wrapped up in there, you've got some different things, right? We've got, like, Force visions, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
We've got premonitions, we've got, you know, cave experiences. There's a lot of sort of...
Yeah!
Umbrella's pretty big of, like, these external happenings within the Force and how the characters react to them. And obviously they give like massively important information, but also some very ambiguous information, almost worse than Yoda. But it's quite interesting how George Lucas fitted in to the stories these visions.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when you think back to the first example that we'll cover, you know, you've got Luke and Yoda, and Yoda's training Luke in the ways of the Force, and he's basically like, see that cave over there? Go in, you must. And he's like, I don't know about all that. Worry about this, you must not. Into the cave. So then those sort of experiences really rely on the participant to let go of themselves and to let the Force really guide them through and come out on the other side having learned something, having gained a new perspective in the Force. And it's interesting because using that example, when Luke is totally skeptical of the whole thing, he's like, I don't know if I should be going in this dark cave. It's all damp and stuff. And Yoda's like, fine it is. And he's like, I don't know about this. I'm gonna grab my belt, my blaster, and my lightsaber because this is sketchy AF. And Yoda's like, no, it is not. So he basically he's like, away, put your weapons. Basically, because all that you bring in is what you get out.
Yeah.
So there's no real inherent danger in the trial. But it's perceived danger, you know, and that will bleed into Yoda's lost missions in the Clone Wars, where you've got this dark side entity. But it's really like once Yoda realizes, hey, this is not an actual threat. This is just a perceived danger to me. Then he gets a hold of it. But he's scared initially.
He totally is. And
yeah.
The experience, like you said, is that, you know, the character's not always meant to experience a sort of a literate vision that from point A to point B, right? Or A to Z in some cases. It's a ambiguous sort of thing. And like we see that in the cave experience on Dagobah. And as we all know, well, these people the two people who listen to our show for a while will know that, you know, this scene is like one of my most psychotic, scary scenes of seeing Luke in Vader's mask. So what does that say? Well, it's his lineage, that kind of thing. So there's like interpretations of that. But these visions plant the seed to help the Force user potentially in the future interpret a scene or understand what maybe the next path is, or like a moment. And like you said, with Yoda in the Lost missions, and, you know, of course, those predate what we're talking about here on Dagobah. That obviously was a massive learning experience for him to sort of help guide Luke through these visions, but also realizing that this is a step that he has to go through to understand what his eventual confrontation with Vader is going to be and the Emperor.
Yeah, so if we start out with that first vision quest that we see on screen, the Luke in the Dagobah cave, basically it plays out based on how Luke reacts to the scene, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when Yoda tells him not to bring his weapons, what do you think happens if he doesn't? If he listens to Yoda, what experience does he have?
I thought about the exact same thing, is that if that lightsaber wasn't there, I believe that lightsaber short battle with Vader would not have happened. It would have been more of a speaking interaction. And that would have probably had the same effect, at least with respect to the story or of how he's going to figure it out. But because he brought his lightsaber, then the vision quest or the Force quest then became, we have to use these lightsabers because you've brought it in here. So it elevated the stakes of the cave experience for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right, because, you know, when they're first talking about Dagobah and how alive the planet is in the Force, it not only feeds off the living creatures, but it also helps to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're bringing in fear or anger,
mm-hmm.
or hesitancy or aggression, then it's going to feed that right back.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's a very interesting situation that he's in, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, Yoda says, don't bring your weapons, you won't need them. I think if he didn't bring them, he wouldn't have needed them. But since he brought them, now it's like, well, this is kind of, you know, the choose your own adventure that you've gone with. And at this point, well, guess what? You're going to hear that other saber ignite. And now it's like, well, now you've got to defend yourself in this really pretend threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's not forget the fact that, you know, obviously screen time, we see a certain amount of time, but has, you know, since become known that his experience and time on Dagobah was a lot more than just like the 48 hours that everyone assumes was going on in there. So he's like,
he took the crash course in Jedi class,
the Cole's notes. So, you know, aside from, I mean, interestingly enough, in the same movie, in The Empire Strikes Back, you know, while Luke is on Hoth and he exits the Wampa's lair, you know, he sees a vision of Obi-Wan and tells him to go to Dagobah to begin with. So this is really the beginning of his trial. So throughout this entire experience, Luke is now just sort of exploring the innate sense and power of the Force. So what's he been doing? So he's been running around the jungle, swinging from vine to vine, that kind of stuff. So rudimentary learnings and teachings of the Force and listening to Yoda and his daily mantras and that kind of stuff. This is his real first confrontation.
Right.
And as someone who hasn't experienced that yet and who hasn't gone through the Padawan stage, of course you're gonna go, oh sure, don't worry about this cave, you know, it's got full of snakes and nasty stuff, and don't worry about it, don't bring your weapons. And but you can't blame him for doing that, because he's just learning this now.
Yeah, it almost gets treated like a final exam, you know. Like when you're talking about the Clone Wars and, you know, Ahsoka's trial of the actual trial, and then how the council's like, yeah, so looks like you passed. It's like, yeah, so I guess that's like, you know, the capstone project or the final exam to really, you know, test your readiness, because if you fail that, then you're really not in any position to let the Force guide you in a safe or productive manner, or to let it flow through you. You're trying to bend it to your will, which is very Sith-like. So you have to think that, you know, that's very important in terms of, like, are you ready for this or not?
And that's the thing, first of all, yes, 100%, because Luke, and in this case, Yoda, have these two different timelines. Yes, he's too old, he's too set in his ways, I can't train him. But he's backed up, Yoda, I mean, up against the bookend of Darth Vader and the Emperor. He knows what's already there.
Yeah.
He has to fast track all of this stuff. So he's trying to compress, you know, 10, 12, 14 years of training for a Padawan into a couple of weeks, what, a month? Who knows how long he really is on Dagobah. So yeah. There's no time for gentle reflection and learning experiences. You got frying pan into the fire. And, you know, if he has the time to do it, which of course we know he doesn't, because not only does he go through that cave experience, he also has the vision of his friends suffering in Cloud City, which obviously gave him away. So, you know, Yoda, at the behest of Obi-Wan and reluctantly, said, okay, I'll train him.
All right, fine.
Yeah, fine. Got me, you did. You know, he pulled back the veil and the curtains of the Force, opened it to Luke. Now the floodgates are open, and finish your training, you must. I promise I'll come back and finish it. Sort of a half-baked Jedi.
It's a
tough thing to try and, like, save the galaxy.
I swung on some vines. I can fight Darth Vader. Don't worry about it.
I can work up a sweat just like anybody.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so it's, like I said, it's the first one we see, but it's really just a glimpse into what sort of training and subject to the Force that these Padawans are. And it's really very interesting to go in depth in these other types of Force visions and quests to really see what was involved in them sort of at the height of the Jedi Order, you know?
Yeah, and the peppering of these Force visions in the original trilogy were few and far between, you know, and I don't, like, aside from, like, say, the Return of the Jedi, where we see the Force ghosts at the end of the movie, I don't really think there's much of a Force vision, is there?
No, not really. It's really just that end scene on Endor.
Yeah.
With the Force ghosts, there's not really anything influential there, because, like you were saying, Obi-Wan has the run, Luke, from A New Hope after he is stricken down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, the whole use the Force at the end with the Death Star, and then the stuff that we just mentioned in Empire. So Return of the Jedi is very much not Force vision-y.
Yeah.
You know, he does use a little Force choke. And of course, I would imagine some Force accuracy with the boulder in the Rancor pit.
Nice.
But aside from that, it's all sort of physical aspects of Force, and not the cosmic Force interacting with the physical world.
Yeah, and that's like the umbrella we were talking about, right? Is that the manifestations of the Force ghosts are driven more about the character that's presenting themselves. But then once we leave Return of the Jedi, then we go into the prequels, where we start to see the Force visions.
Yeah, and like we were talking about, that's sort of at the height of the Jedi and the Jedi Council and the Jedi Order, where we're like, they've got things running pretty well in terms of, like, being able to train and having the time and the resources to train these Padawans the most effectively.
Yeah, they've got their rituals, their trials to select their Padawans. It's, like you said, it's a completely different time, and there's a process to it. And as we come to find out, sometimes that process fails.
Yes, sometimes it does.
And what's really interesting, of course, is then, you know, not to jump too far ahead, but like in the Clone Wars, and we see some deep stuff in there. Maybe before we get to that, maybe we'll take a quick break here.
Okay.
And we'll jump into the prequel era vision quests right after this.
Bow, bow.
It's so good.
It's ridiculous. Bow, bow.
In this great big galaxy, have you ever felt like you were meant for more than bullseyeing womp rats or fixing broken speeders on some backwater moon? Then Plo Koon Piloting Institute should be your next destination. That's right, at PKPI, learn to fly from aviation experts who've mastered the art of flying many ship styles, like Clone Commander Wolf.
That's right, we instruct on the Delta 7 Starfighters, ARC 170s, N1 Starfighters, and A-Wings.
The Institute even has specialty pilots with expertise in improved Actus-class Jedi Starfighters and the brand new X-Wing Starfighters, right?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Well, clearly Mr. Wolf has a class to give, so we'll let him go. But before we do, we have a special message from Jedi Master Plo Koon himself.
Koto Ya, young pilot. Join me to become the best pilot you can be. I've trained some of the best and worst.
Master Plo, who are you talking to?
We even offer courses in flying casual, where you can learn to keep your distance without looking like you're keeping your distance. Casual flying results not guaranteed.
Bow, bow. Yeah, we're back! So, yeah, we just got done talking about the original trilogy's Force Visions, Trials, and Tribulations of Luke.
Yes. And now we're heading into the prequel era.
Yeah.
You know, greatly bolstered by the ancillary releases, whether it be
right.
The Clone Wars or the books, because that really added to the depth and breadth of the Force Visions and how important they became.
Yeah, so you've got, a greater presence of the Force in the prequel trilogy because you've got so many more people kind of in tune with it, communing within it. And the light side of the Force was kind of stomped out, if you will, by the Empire. So, before the Empire, it was flourishing, I think, quite a bit more, and with more Force sensitives kind of out in public. I feel like that was more of a presence overall. So you have a whole lot more, not only abilities, but like interactions between the living and the cosmic force.
Absolutely. And some of that does begin with the prophecies that we are first introduced in the prequel trilogy, right? About like,
you mean the chosen one?
You are the chosen one. Okay, not yet, too early. That's not my line anyways.
Right.
But yeah, so now Qui-Gon being the Padawan to Dooku, and mm-hmm. Dooku, of course, was a huge mm-hmm. student of the prophecies. So, and obviously that's led him to Anakin and you know, thinking him being the chosen one. So yeah. Those aren't obviously Force visions. They're prophecies. But I think they really play a key role in.
But how were they prophecies, though? Like, do you think they came to some Jedi somewhere and, in some sort of vision? Could be.
That's a fantastic point. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because they're written down from somewhere.
Yeah.
So they became sort of this liturgy, these scriptures that the Jedi always sort of thinking about and waiting for the time to come about. And then once Qui-Gon introduced these prophecies to us as viewers, but also to the characters, Obi-Wan and, of course, Anakin, I think they play a really key role in that. And before we get to the Phantom Menace and maybe, Attack of the Clones, timeline-wise, the Master and Apprentice novel that came out, which is a fantastic book.
It's your favorite book.
So... but they explicitly detailed what the prophecies were. And so here's a quick rundown of how they're explained in that book. So prophecy one.
Boy.
She who will be born to darkness will give birth to darkness.
Oh boy.
That was the first
one. I don't like the sound of that.
Right.
That sounds ominous.
Prophecy two. When the Kyber that is not Kyber shines forth, the time of prophecy will be at hand.
When the Kyber is not Kyber, shines forth.
The time of prophecy will be at hand.
Huh. All right. I mean, that's not confusing.
Prophecy 3. When the righteous lose the light, evil once dead shall return.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Prophecy 4. One will ascend to the highest of the Jedi despite the foreboding of those who would serve with him.
Wow. Despite being too dangerous to be left alive.
Prophecy 5 is a thick one, okay?
Oh, boy.
Only through sacrifice of many Jedi will the Order cleanse the sin done to the Nameless.
Which Order? 65? Oh, 66. Got it.
The danger of the past is not past, but sleeps in an egg. When the egg cracks,
uh-oh,
it will threaten the galaxy entire.
Oh, boy.
When the Force itself sickens, past and future must split and combine. A chosen one shall come, born of no father, and through him will ultimate balance in the Force be restored.
Yes, Jedi Jesus.
So, and that's only Prophecy 5, that's not number 6.
Oh boy.
That was a big one, that was a big one.
Wait, there's more.
There's more, all for the same price.
Feels like a ShamWow commercial. Okay, continue.
ShamWow.
Yep, ShamWow, baby.
And Prophecy 6, he who learns to conquer death will through his greatest student live again.
Oh, Palpatine.
Ay, ay, ay.
Oh, you mean Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, or even Qui-Gon, but yes, that seems like a perfect little segue into Palpatine. So there you go. So those are the 6 prophecies that were revealed in Master and Apprentice. So having those as a context, what we're going to talk about now for, you know, in part 2 here, those are really, really deep and quite effective plays on the story as it unfolds.
Mm-hmm.
Timeline-wise, this is, before the prequel trilogy, but in real time, of course, it was after them. So they're backfilling some story, but just, again, enriching the story and just making that much more interconnected, which really adds a lot of flavor to the stuff we're about to see throughout not just the movies, but all the animated series as well.
Yeah, it's true. So, again, like we've said many, many times, and that's also been echoed by our friend Rob at the Jedi Temple Archives, we get the entire prequel trilogy enriched by the Clone Wars episodes. They can just dive way deeper into everything and really explore things on a whole different level than they're able to in a 2-hour film. And that's where a lot of this stuff that maybe is hinted at in the films really gets explored, because you've got these interactions with the Force that are very cool and very interesting, but don't necessarily directly serve the greater story that the prequels were trying to tell. So so a lot of that is glossed over or like briefly mentioned in the films, but then throughout the series they get a chance to explore those in greater depth and really just deepen and strengthen the lore of the Force.
Absolutely. And you know, with the movies themselves, if we look at The Phantom Menace, maybe that's the groundwork, like we talked about, where we get the foundation of the prophecies and then planting the seeds of where some of the Anakin's Force dreams that he has in Attack of the Clones are placed, right? And that's really one of the first things that we see or hear as he explains to Padme, is that in Attack of the Clones, he has a vision of his mother's suffering and pain at the hands of the Tusken Raiders. And this is one of the first times that we see, like, okay, he's being tortured by these memories. And of course, as we know, you know, the attachments, the whole bit, that's part of some of his flaws of his character that Yoda was worried about. But his visions now are starting to affect his trajectory.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because he's having these visions and they're bringing back those emotions and those attachments that are forbidden. And, you know, it stands to reason, not to get too far off track, but it stands to reason that if the Jedi were able to, and like not dissuaded from, healthy attachments, then he could have interacted with his mother and prevented any such fate already.
Yeah. Wow.
But since he was unable to, it's like, well, this is what happened, which also is like, okay, well, he probably could have at least prevented her death, if not a great deal of her suffering, had he been able to see her or communicate with her prior. So he's got to be a little peeved at the Jedi for that.
Oh, that's a great point.
I know. That's why I said it.
Right. But think of the trajectory of the story, how that would have changed if he did have that. Or, and not just him, of course, the entire Jedi Order having somewhat attachments to their families. I mean, in the case of Anakin, of course, would be massive.
Yeah.
Other ones, maybe not so much, but pivotal in the sense that had he had that time with her and prevented her death, would have kept them more balanced and maybe, you know, further away from the dark side of the Force, and would have changed the entire thing and could have been ultimately the one who brought balance to the Force before, you know, killing everybody. So that would have been
right.
So we go from the Attack of the Clones then into the Clone Wars, like you said, where we have, well, seven seasons, in fact, of this, you know, episodic storytelling that can go into really, really deep Force lore and make those Force visions a lot more real time, in the sense that you're not forsaking, like you said, a 2-hour movie and taking out 15 minutes of story time to delve into it, but really making it more natural, more flowing, in the sense, oh, wow, that's really, you know, works into the character. And like Tom and Michelle have said at the Hyperion Adventures podcast, if you haven't watched the Clone Wars yet, you got to start watching them now, because there's so much, they're pulling so much more information from it, like in Ahsoka.
Right. Yeah. Or as I told my co-host before, you know, when he said he doesn't watch cartoons, that it's not a cartoon, it's a story that's done in animation.
Oh, what a jerk.
I know.
Ugh, that co-host of yours. Yuck.
Yuck.
So we have a lot of stuff. I mean, there's so many things that we could pluck out of the Clone Wars, but what would be a couple of the important ones that you'd pick out of the Clone Wars for
come on. So first of all, you got you have the Mortis arc. Okay. I mean, that's as Force vision questy as it gets. And then of course Yoda's vision quest in Lost Mission.
Exactly. Absolutely. I have those two written down. The other two that I wrote down, was what we saw in season 7, where Maul had a Force vision seeing Anakin becoming Sidious's apprentice.
Yeah.
At the Ahsoka. And even with that information, she still doesn't share that with the council. But of course, why would she? Because she's just a citizen.
Yeah. But you can't fault her for that, because Dooku literally told Obi-Wan like the whole plot.
Yes.
And he was like, oh, I don't believe you. It's like, why? Like, he's telling you the truth. You're the bad guy. You must be lying. No.
The other couple that I put in there was Sifo Dyas.
Oh, yeah. Sifo Dyas. Right.
Like a huge arc. Of course, now that's not really the Clone Wars. It culminates in the Clone Wars, but
it's actually a tiny arc, but it has such a huge footprint on the series.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Sifo Dyas, who, his Jedi power was foresight. So, you know, these visions for him were like almost like a torment. That was just, he was very scarred by it because of how, you know, as his power grew, and he was a very close friend of Dooku when they were both.
Yeah. They grew up together.
Yeah, exactly. And his master, Lena Costana, really helped him open that and into the cosmic force. And he got these visions.
His master sounds like a character from The Sopranos.
Leo
Lena Costana.
Costana. Costana's hauling. he had a vision of the Republic. So the Jedi Council members sort of...
Yeah, an attack on the Republic, so that they needed a defense, which they didn't have. I mean, I guess having some dudes with laser swords counts, but like they didn't have an actual defense, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. And before he had sort of let that, as it were, the Lothcat out of the bag, it offered him a seat on the Jedi Council. But when he started pushing this vision that he had, say, look, this is coming, we got a problem, they rescinded it. He, you know, they said, okay, forget about it. That's a little bit too out there.
Yeah.
But he still went ahead, and under the false guise that he had the support of the Republic and the Jedi Council, he got the Kaminoans to produce that army for them. And that's what we see in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's essentially like a, almost like a cryptic throwaway name in the film. And then in the supplementary material, in the series, in the books, and all, you're like, this dude's kind of a big deal. Like, he's he foresaw. I don't know. He foresaw like so much of what was happening, and it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because he foresaw things, so he took steps to prevent them, and in doing so, he created the clone army and set these pieces in place to make what he saw a reality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And because he was that close with Dooku, the way that the Jedi Council treated him was a big influence on how Dooku saw the Jedi Council and his trust in them, and you know how he worked with them in the future. So again, pivotal points. And the other one that I plucked out of the Clone Wars, now this is probably not going to be a popular character to look at, but Pong Krell.
Oh.
Really sort of not a great guy.
No, not great at all. Kind of an
Oh, yeah. He always felt that the clones were inferior, that the...
Yeah, they were made for battle, so if they die, they die. He's like basically the intergalactic Ivan Drago.
Wow. So he had Force Vision where he saw that the Jedi Order fell and became extinct. Now, this is before... He was seduced by the dark side. So, of course, his visions were leaning towards the dark side and almost becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. He had gains on the field. And it's like one of those situations where, well, he's got some battlefield victories with heavy, heavy losses and his disdain for the clones. But, of course, the larger view of the Jedi Council and the Republic, for that matter, is like, well, if he's winning battles, we got to keep him there.
Uh-huh.
He was like, you know, tipping the scales. He was basically trying to become Dooku's apprentice. But those Force visions that he saw led him to maybe make those decisions, as poor as they were. And I'm not, you know, saying that takes away...
I feel like you're a Pong Krell sympathizer.
Not at all. But...
Good.
As we talked about way back, you know, in the opening, the Sith were also able to have Force visions. And of course, they swung towards the dark side of the Force. Those are some deep visions from the Clone Wars. And then from there, we run right into Revenge of the Sith and some very, very impactful visions that Anakin had.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to see how, like, you have all these characters that are undergoing this sort of spiritual, cosmic trials. And then... And then you've got like Ahsoka that absolutely just gets screwed by the council. And they're like, well, that was your trial. And I'm like, I don't know about all that.
It's true.
I'm like, I feel like that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, kind
of. Like she had to withstand like all of that, but that's because you guys were jerks.
Yep. No wonder why she left.
Yeah. Like that's no vision quest. That's like them being like, yeah, no, we did all that so that you could be a Jedi Master. Yay! And she's like, yeah, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I'm out.
Neither am I, Council.
And you can check out our episode 113 for that, where we dive deep into where Ahsoka left the Order. That's a really good episode, actually.
I don't suggest you do that. It's sad, and I cried.
Well, there is that, too.
But, like, speaking of these spiritual aspect of things, you've got, like... That whole business with Yoda and the Lost Missions, which is like trippy and weird and a little bit scary and crazy and just all of this confusion. And, you know, this is a dude that's been studying the Force for like a bunch of years, like 800 years.
Yep.
So kind of a big deal if you can present a scenario that can shake this guy.
Right. And add like a tool to the Jedi Order that has never been available before. Driven by Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
And not necessarily being disembodied voices like we hear in the A New Hope, but apparitions, but also using the cosmic force to help the Jedi work through it. And that was a game changer for sure.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that has proven time and time again to be super beneficial to everybody, you know?
Yep.
From Luke to even Leia and Anakin, you know, countless other characters who've like communed with each other or gotten those assists from the cosmic force in terms of the knowledge and presence of these force ghosts or force voices and all.
Yeah, exactly. So in the Revenge of the Sith, Anakin, of course, has that vision of Padme dying. And that's like the turning point for him, right?
I mean, that's all we see, but I'm sure he saw that several times. You know, I'm sure that thing has been haunting him for quite some time. Probably since they got romantically involved.
Right. You know? And especially since she revealed to him that she was pregnant. So that was probably...
Yeah.
And whether that was Palpatine manipulating him to, you know, push him forward into his turn to the dark side. So that was a huge vision that he had. And of course, we see that the turn, and we all well know how Revenge of the Sith ends. So that ends the prequel trilogy. So then we move into, timeline-wise at least, Rebels era, and a whole new set of characters, a whole new set of Force sensitives and their own particular visions and how that affects the growing rebellion now as we build up to A New Hope.
Yeah, and come on, you got like the Bendu, you've got the deal with Tar Vizsla and stuff. You've got all these very new ideas of the Force and key players in those stories that are just fascinating to hear about and to have that extra layer to the Force and to kind of what makes it up and how it's regarded by different entities. You know, you've got the dark side that wants to bend it to their will, the light side that wants to use it for good. Mm-hmm. But then you've got like that neutral that just kind of lets it flow. And as John Lennon might say, just let it be.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you brought up the Bendu.
I love the Bendu. It's my favorite.
Amazing. So let me pose a question to you. Do you think that the Bendu was a Force vision, or do you think that the Bendu was there?
No, he's a dude. He's a real dude.
Okay.
I think the Bendu is a very in-tune creature with the Force.
Okay.
And knows it in its raw state. You know, not the good stuff that the Jedi teach you, not the bad stuff that the Sith want to manipulate, but just the Force in general, you know, just knowing about it and all its aspects and learning from it, but also giving it space to do what it does, you know, to influence people and things and to run like a river, basically, to forge the path that it's going to forge, despite how people try and use it.
Nice, without hindrance. So like they almost like the most natural, neutral, force sensitive that you can have. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
You know, aside from the Bendu, Ezra had a multitude of different
forces,
whether it's seeing the future, seeing his parents, seeing the empireless Lothal in the galaxy. But Kanan had a really powerful vision in one of the Jedi temples on Lothal, where he was battling one of the temple guards, you know, fighting for the fate of Ezra. Not unlike Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan fighting for the fate of Anakin with Maul. And then after he understands what he needs to do and lets Ezra find his own path, does this temple guard reveal himself as one of the Inquisitors or a fallen Jedi? That set Kanan off onto his path and what ultimately became his sacrifice and a huge impact on his character. And again, like, both Rob and Tom have said, you know, if you're not watching Rebels, it's also a disservice, because those will play into or have played into the Ahsoka series. Hoping we get season two of Ahsoka, you know, imagine the Bendu show up. That's like one of the wild cards that could be out there as well, which would be fantastic. Oh, yeah. So now that would be just
mind blowing. Then it'd have two Doctor Who doctors as characters on the show.
Yes. amazing. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I think that these visions, these quests, these contributions to the Force as a whole really just strengthen the Force, and also for a sensitive individual, you've got certain things that you're going to learn from and that are going to impact you, and then other things are going to impact other people in different ways that lead them to their fate.
Right, and how those experiences affect their future paths, or how they interpret it, because it's not just from our perspective as viewers, but also from the characters. Then we fast forward to the sequel trilogy, in The Force Awakens, and Rey hears the calling of Luke's lightsaber.
Yes.
Picks it up, and almost like psychometry, right? Like that one Jedi power that Quinlan Vos has, Cal Kestis. And she sees this story unfold in front of her and hears Obi-Wan's voice. And like, she's immediately jarred, and Maz Kanata confronts her, and not confronts her, but like sort of presents herself. And this is, you know, your path forward. And it's just, how cool was that when she opens the box and she touches the lightsaber that we haven't seen since Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. And then it kind of has those little clips of everything that the saber has been through. Yes. and all that.
And then in The Last Jedi, where she has her own cave experience, right? Where,
yeah, in a literal cave.
In a literal cave. And again, here you have Luke, sort of like the most powerful Jedi in corporeal being, at least, that we know of in the galaxy, alive, sitting on this island of Akto, very similar to Yoda on Dagobah, sitting on this very powerful dark side cave. She goes in there, has her experience in the dark, and very pivotal for her as a character, just like Luke's was in The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah. And, again, you've got these characters that are new to the Force with her and Luke, that are really just learning and trying to get a grasp on this whole world they've just been introduced to, and how it can kind of fundamentally impact them. But then, you know, when you're talking about established Jedi having these visions and quests and all, it's got to be more more impactful, because it's like they've already learned this stuff and also to have something like that kind of grab their attention and really say, hey, you know, this is something important, it has to be kind of a big deal, you know.
Yeah, and forces them as a character to like sort of reevaluate and like, wow, what the heck was that, and
yeah,
bring a slice of reality to them. And you know, we see a bit of that in The Rise of Skywalker, I was alluding to before. Really, for me at least, one of the most wonderful moments where Ben / Kylo is on second moon of Endor. I can't think of the name of it right now.
The closest moon of Endor.
Okay, right, not the farthest moon. Right.
Right, exactly.
And Han Solo appears behind them. Now, what's your interpretation of that? Do you think it was a manifestation of what Ben needed at the moment?
Yes. Or,
okay, so
obviously it wasn't Force Ghost Han.
Right, no, because he's sensitive, but...
Right. It's an interesting take, because when you first hear, hey, kid, I thought it was Mark Hamill's impression of
yes.
Harrison. And then it pans over, and it wasn't. And I was like, but he's not Force sensitive. And then people argue, well, he can make the Kessel run and make all these smuggler runs and stuff. And all. It's like that. Yeah. Being a good pilot does not a Jedi make. Okay.
Right.
Just because it worked for Anakin doesn't mean it works for everybody. So I don't subscribe to the notion that Han was Force sensitive any more than any other reg. but as the Force works, it does impact people, maybe giving them a leg up in the chance game of gambling or smuggling and things like that. So there are certainly aspects to Han that I think were influenced by the Force, but I know in no way, shape, or form do I believe that he was particularly Force sensitive. So that being said, this manifestation's like, oh, well, that's interesting. But the only person he would have been impacted by or been persuaded by would be his father. I think that was the Force just saying, look, this is a vision that you need in order to get on the right path. Yeah. And then he pretty well immediately was.
Very cool. One of the great moments in that movie for me, at least. And of course, we saw Dark Rey, which was, again, pivotal for her character. And she turned away from that pretty quickly. And then finally, we end with We Are All the Jedi.
Yes.
And again, less of a vision, more of a support from all the Jedi, whether it's alive, dead, or not. They were there and supporting her in her final battle.
Yeah, and that's, you know, like, not only drawing strength from, but it's like, you know, you get your cheerleaders.
Yes.
You know, they're all like, yeah, you can do it. And she's like, I can do it. And then she does it.
Well, some of the Jedi that we hear are dead and pass on to the Force. Some of them we're not sure of, like Ahsoka. But through the Force, these Jedi knew that this was a pivotal battle on this distant planet. And they were able to converge and support her in this final battle against the Emperor, which transcends a vision. It transcends a quest. And it's about coming together at a moment where the good battles evil and ultimately successfully. And that's really cool because it brings it all together and sort of congeals it as one, which is, again, really pretty cool.
Yeah, and when you're confronted with these communications through the cosmic force especially, and you're in that right mindset, it can really kind of boost things. Whereas if you're in that wrong mindset, it can really shove you down that wrong road.
Very true. Just ask Anakin.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly the point. So yeah, it's really one of those things, like Yoda was saying, you only take what you need, and whatever you do take will influence the outcome.
Oh, wow. Nice.
When you bring into it fear and anger, you will be fearful and angry. When you bring serenity and peace and understanding, you'll be able to cut through whatever trickery may be afoot, like Yoda did, and say, hey, this isn't real. No matter how much I want this part to be real, or no matter how much that part scares me, it's not real. So, you know, yes, you can,
that's good.
You can cut right through that with a sense of peace and understanding to work through that and end up in a good spot versus a bad spot.
Wow. And that comes down to the individual at that point. That's a great bookend.
Full circle.
That's awesome. Wow. I know you're not holding a mic, but you should drop it anyways.
Oh, that's why I'm not holding one, because I dropped it already. I dropped it right after, and I'm Pat, and this is...
Oh, man. Very cool. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Force visions and quests, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, with that being said, before we get into our socials and our clothes...
I'm already in my clothes. I don't know what you're doing, buddy. Oh, clothes.
Yes, clothes.
Okay. Closing. Yeah. Our closing of the show. Yes. Right. Okay.
So before we get to our clothing... closing. last episode, we had asked the question, what is like a group of rancors called?
Right.
Because of it came up in our Dune episode.
I think it's called a flock of rancors.
So Ro of Scarif Scuttlebutt, podcast fame and co-founder of the Red 5 Network, and he had suggested that more than a few rancors should be called a prickle. A
prickle of rancors.
Prickle of rancors.
All right. I mean, maybe. More than a few. Okay, so like five?
Yeah, well, I guess, what would you call a group, though? More than, like, three and above? Two would be a couple.
Right.
Three would be a few. So four and above.
Three's a crowd.
Three's a crowd. So that four is a prickle.
Right.
Four and above is a prickle.
Okay.
So, given the fact that was our only response to... I say row one with the prickle.
I guess out of all the options, that's the best.
We'll send him some stickers or something.
All right.
And make sure you follow Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast. They have weekly shows and great topics and stuff. And Ro, we love you, and you're the best.
Yeah, you can find him in bio.link/red5.
Yes, you can. But where can you find our stuff, though?
I don't know. Right here on our podcast. However, the very best place to find us is on our own website at conversations.com. We are on the facebooks.com/conversations. We're somebody's doing Twitter at Swations.
Of course, X, right?
X? Oh, you're not doing it anymore?
That's okay. You're sympathizing with Tom. That's fine. We'll go with Twitter. That's fine.
We are Conversations on Instagram. We are on Threads at Conversations. We have a Commerce Suations Etsy shop. And if you forgot all those, if you didn't bring a pen and didn't want to look in the show notes, then we are on link.tree/conversations for all our goodies there. And that's it. That's all we got.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from being proud founding members of the Red 5 Network.
Yes, absolutely.
So, as the first cosmic force being to commune with the living force, Qui-Gon, I think we should have a Qui-Gon quote.
We should. That would be like two episodes in a row that I've closed it out.
Well, you know, don't get cocky. Qui-Gon Jinn.
And I'll go with one of my favorites. That would be, your focus determines your reality.
Greetings, listener. Just a reminder that the podcast you just heard is a proud member of the Red 5 Network family. Red5Network.com offers you a great variety of shows you'll be sure to love. So the next time you're itching for quality content, make sure you head over to Red5Network.com. You'll find this podcast along with a whole lot more. All wings report in. It's the Red 5 Network.